Tom Cazzola. Hey, he's always looking to improve himself in the market. What is happening, Scott? Tommy?
Yes, improvement day in, day out. Just try to get better. It's all about that hustle, Craig. So,
Hey, buddy. Oh, well, hey, there, things are reopening up again. The life of Tommy. Man, the single life. You just can't wait. Holy cow.
Being cooped up for like the last year.
Yeah, you're gonna be
I'm already.
What? They could like make a new song every day. We swipe in, do, right? Oh, perfect. I'm sure it'd be all over that. All over it. You and Tyler, you're around. Oh, no, Ty's got a girlfriend. So,
yeah.
No, just be you going solo. Just going solo. Maybe with Maddie. Maybe with Maddie Iwanek. We'll see. Give him some Tinder tips.
Sure.
Actually, we should have a segment, Iwanek's Tinder tips.
I don't think he does Tinder.
I know. That's the whole point. We'd have to give him some tips to do it. That would be great. Oh, that would be golden. Absolutely golden. Especially because Dave would chime in from his tips on from back in when he was, 50 years ago when he was dating. So that would be good.
You know,
I want to talk, first of all, and I really applaud the NBA because, hey, I'm all for fans getting into the game. You know what? You want to chirp opposing players? Awesome. As long as you don't make it racial or derogatory, I have no issue with it. Witty ones, love it. Chirping guys, like in hockey, when you have the two-syllable goalie and it's like, Turco, and everybody's doing it, awesome. No problem with that. But did you see like some New York Knicks fan actually spat on Trae Young? Gross. Got kicked out and banned. You had another fan who's dumping popcorn on, and people can say, well, popcorn doesn't hurt. But you don't dump food on a player. Like, what are these fans doing? It's like, well, we haven't been in a building, so now we come back and we're just, acting like Neanderthals. So good for the NBA. And I'll say this, every sport, I would crack down on every fan. Just because you buy a ticket doesn't give you a reason to be a petulant, ignorant human being.
Yeah, this is bad. I mean, the popcorn one is one thing. And you look at it and you go, okay, well, Russell Westbrook went berserk and he was already fired up and all that stuff. And They banned him in Philly, the fan that dumped the popcorn. But the spitting thing, that's on a completely different level in a very disgusting way. I don't understand how you get to that point where you're going to spit on an athlete. Maybe you don't like that particular athlete. You don't like the team they play for. But to do something like that it's reprehensible. I mean, I know we saw the stuff with Ethan Bear, which was totally disgusting in itself, too, and good on Ethan for putting out the message yesterday. But this contact with the athlete, especially when you're close like that, courtside in basketball or it's football when you get the leap into the stands or anything like that, I don't understand it. It's ridiculous. I don't know if people are trying to do some of this stuff to get on SportsCenter or to do it for social media purposes, but like if you're a true sports fan, don't you want to continue to go to sporting events? And I don't know, Greg's. You and I have been to a lot of sporting events as fans, as working media, but I've had my few nights where I've had quite a bit to drink. And I've never thought about running onto a field, doing something to a player, engaging with them whatsoever. I don't comprehend this type of behavior from some fans. And it's absolutely stupid. And to see it all in one day like that is, it's insane.
Yeah, it's... You know what? Good for the NBA, though, to come down with swift action. And, send them... I'll say everybody, once they know the severe consequences... All of a sudden, you think twice about it. I've always said in our society, if we had a harsher punishment for certain things we did, people would be less likely to do it. It's just that simple. If it was mandated that on social media you had to be on your real name, guaranteed social media wouldn't be as toxic as it is. Not even close. Yep. Not even close. But there's way to, those companies enable it, and then many people just feast on it. It's kind of too bad. Tommy, today we're talking about left wingers for the Edmonton Oilers. Wrote the article about it. Because I look at, now it doesn't mean they can't get a right winger, but I see Archibald and Cassian and Yamamoto and Puljujärvi, and they're all there. Now, they might lose Josh Archibald. in the expansion draft, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on how many forwards they protect. There's a chance they could lose Josh Archibald, right? I think he's more likely than a guy like Zach Kassian because of Kassian's contract. Although Kassian, when he's on his game, has real value. But so there is a possibility that they could lose one of those guys, right? And so then you'd need another right winger for sure. But when it comes to scoring left wingers, that's a need. Now, for this specific series, I'm going to pretend that Nugent Hopkins is testing free agency, okay? Just because that now opens up a spot. Who would be, like, your top two or three left wingers that you would, if you're Ken Holland, go looking for in free agency?
Oh, boy. Just looking at the list right now, and it's not a sexy list, but if you could talk to Thomas Tatar.
Oh, I think it's ideal on a one-year deal, man.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got Tyson Barry as a forward written all over it.
Yep. And, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with a guy like Jaden Schwartz, but he's an excellent player. He's been to a Stanley Cup final. He's won a Stanley Cup. He, despite his, you know, size or lack of size, he finds a way. He's got the skill, the talent, and the track record. If you can make the money work there, Tatar and Schwartz are two guys that I like. I mean, you're not going to get a sniff at Hall or Laine or Steen's done anyway. Landeskog, Foligno, I don't think he's kind of on the decline. But those two really stick out to me, Greggs, that you look at that and you go, well, if you can make that money work and they're willing to come here and try to make it go as a team that's potentially getting into, I don't want to say contender yet, but it's the impetus to win is imminent. And if they can elevate that, then good. And if that's a fit, then good, because you need that extra scoring punch on the left side. That's abundantly clear. Those two names stand out to me. I hope that that's sufficient. Oilers fans go, hey, that's not bad.
I could see one of two. I don't think they'd sign both just because they're both kind of similar in size stature. So the other two names, and there's a few other names out there, but the two that I looked at specific were Zach Hyman and Blake Coleman. And Blake Coleman's numbers are really, because I looked at guys specifically that would produce 5-on-5. I took out all the power play numbers because this team needs players who can help them score 5-on-5. Right? Their power play is fine. The power play is going to be good because 97 and 29 are on it. If Nugent Hopkins is on it, great. If he isn't, the power play is still going to be fine. But when I look at 5-on-5 guys, and over the, and so I went the last 3 years. Over the last three seasons, Blake Coleman, 38 goals, 5-on-5. Tatar, 37, Hyman, 35, and Jaden Schwartz had 22. Now, Schwartz had more assists than them. Tatar was clearly the most productive at 5-on-5 overall. And then I looked at their possession numbers. And you know what? All these guys are pretty good possession number players. Right? Because, you know, when you look at expected goals, if you want to look at goals for or against, you want to look at scoring chances, you know, they're all positives. Now, Tatar in Montreal was an absolute demon on 5-on-5. Now, Montreal is a pretty good 5-on-5 team. So, you know, that probably plays a part in it. But man, the more I looked into Blake Coleman's numbers, now he only made $1.8 million. He's getting a raise. But man, like Blake Coleman's a guy, because if Blake Coleman was in my top six next year, but then I had to play him in my third line if Holloway's ready in a year after that, I'm okay with that. Right. And so I really like Blake Coleman the more I look at him and Zach Hyman. I'm just curious on what Zach Hyman's value is going to be on the open market.
Right. And now correct me if I'm wrong. Toronto has to figure out what's going to happen with Freddie Anderson. And then, you know, they're saying if they keep Anderson, then Hyman goes to market. But if they keep Hyman, then Anderson goes to market. And Anderson, I know Jack Campbell's taken the job from him, and Anderson had the injury issue. He was gone for like a month, and it was murky as to what was going on. So it's going to be interesting to see how Toronto handles it. Zach Hyman digs, hustles, honest, and he earns everything he gets offensively. So that's a good one. I know his name has been bouncing around for a while this season because that question mark came up, and anything that's Toronto related, obviously everybody in the country has to hear about. Coleman, I do like too. He's feisty. He's tenacious. I know they really liked him when he was back in New Jersey, and he's been a boon for Tampa. Yeah. I wonder what he's going to demand price wise. And here's the other thing too, Greg's going into the summer with the cap and the situation everybody across the league's in, how much money can the premier free agents really demand this offseason? Like, what is realistic compared to what they would get in a normal year if we were on that escalating scale in the salary cap, and how much of a wrench has been tossed into all of that in the last couple of years here?
Yeah, it's a fair question. Like, if you look at it last year, there was four free agents who got more than 4 years on the free agent market. That's it. Right now, those were actual UFAs. I'm not including Gallagher and guys who are re-signed as RFAs. But actual UFAs. Two defensemen in Pietrangelo and Krug, and two goaltenders. Right? In Leonard and Markstrom. That's it. And Leonard's technically was even re-signed by his own team. But, you know, it's long-term. Like, Taylor Hall probably could get 5 years from Boston if he wanted. You know, I would think, depending on what number he wants there. You know, they're in a good spot because of what Pastrnak and Marchand make. It's, you know, it's hard to see anybody come in there and make way more than that, right? So it's kind of a good deal for them. But when I look at any of this year's crop of free agents, like, you know, people in Edmonton, I remember at the start of the year, people were ripping on Nugent Hopkins. He's got to be sick. People wanted to pay him 6.5 for 6 years. Like, it was just, that would be a gift for Edmonton. And I was like, pump the brakes, fans. Like, I'm sorry, but no. Like, Adam Larson, if he gets 4 years, that's a great deal. Well, good deal for him. You know, ideally you want three, but even 4 years because of the style he plays. But, you know, I look at those other guys. Landeskog's a captain, so that might squeeze him another year. But, you know, I don't see any of these UFAs at their age that I would give more than 4 years to. Some are going to get it, but I wouldn't do it because I think you're going to regret those final years of those deals. Because none of the UFAs this year, excluding Hall because he won a Hart Trophy, are elite. Right. Well, no, let me see. Dougie Hamilton would be an elite defenseman. So
sure.
Those two.
Yeah. It's a weird list. Again, the numbers and the salary and all that and the cap is odd. And we've kind of gotten to this point now, I think, collectively, when we look at teams and how teams go about, or GMs go about building their teams, is when a guy gets to a certain age in late 20s now, the lengthy contracts everyone's become very leery of, and expiration dates seem to have gotten bumped up for guys. As soon as you get to that 32, 33, 34 range, it's like, ugh, I think their best years are way behind them. So a lot of teams too, especially here, have been bitten by those long-term deals. I mean, the Oilers are going to be paying for Milan Lucic $750,000 per season for the next couple of years still, and that's one that's going to haunt them for a little bit. I know it's not a crazy amount, but it does take away from the cap space, so I think people and fan bases are generally quite leery, and you make a good point about the list this year. It's like, I don't know if you'd be willing to go really long in terms of length with some of these guys, and that's completely understandable now.
Here's an interesting one comes in from a texter. Hey, boys, what do you think about Phil Kessel out of Arizona if the Coyotes retain some salary? He's only got 1 year left. Whew, that would be Now, I don't, you know, Phil, I don't know if Phil wants to be in a hockey market, to be honest.
Exactly.
Right? Like, no, like, I'm not sure he does in a Canadian market. Now, maybe because there's McDavid and Drysdale and they would be the big dogs that, you know what? And he saw success playing with Crosby and Malkin. I think that's what people overlook when they talk about the moves Pittsburgh made. Phil Kessel came in, and Phil Kessel now gave them a three-headed monster up front, and he was legit for them. He probably should have won the Conn Smythe in 2016. He was incredible. Crosby, I think, won on name recognition more so than just his play on the ice. Just me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Phil, geez, if on a one-year deal, if you're paying Phil Kessel $5 million, there's some intrigue there, but he hasn't done a lot 5-on-5 lately. That's my only concern there. But,
yeah.
Man, I like him. Skilled player, man. Skilled player.
You make a really good point about playing in a hockey market too. He's in Arizona, flies under the radar. He can put up whatever points he's putting up and just coast. You know what I mean? And casually play and contribute. And I'm with you 100% in terms of his mindset. I don't know if he necessarily wants to be in the spotlight anymore, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'd be a little surprised by it, but I like the thinking. I like the thinking about it for sure. Tommy, have yourself a good one. So if you can pick, so your votes, you're taking Tatar and Schwartz. Those are your top two UFAs that you would target?
I like those two, and you know, and that's to add something different from the Coleman discussion, because I know that's a great one. If you can get Coleman and Hyman, those are tremendous players on the up and up. I just wanted to throw a little something different at you. So those are the two I went with.
It's all good, Tommy. Appreciate it, buddy. Have a good one.
See you tomorrow, Gregs.